Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Thank you for being here this Monday morning. We have a number of bills that are up for public hearing and possible work sessions, plus a work session. With the flow that we have and the sense of the number of people and stuff, we're going to start at the bottom of the agenda and work around based on members that are here. So we'll start with a public hearing on House Bill 4142A.
China. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, House Bill 4142A comes to you from Representative Gorsuch. It prohibits a company that employs private security professionals from using a name that implies that the company is associated with a law enforcement unit or law enforcement agency. It grandfathers in businesses that are currently in operation and provides rulemaking authority to the Board of Public Safety Standards and Trainings on this issue.
All right, thank you. Representative Gorsuch, I think you may be our only individual here on 4142. Why don't you come on up to give us your testimony? While the representative is coming up, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 4142A? Chris, when you're ready.
Okay. Apparently I'm all alone. That's all right, though. Well, good morning, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Gorsuch. I am the representative for House District 49 in East Multnomah County. I am here in support of House Bill 4142A, and this bill comes to you with unanimous support from the House Judiciary Committee and also from the floor of the House. The reason for the bill basically is I noticed that there were a number of security companies in the state that seemed to have some names that were blurring the lines between security firms and law enforcement agencies. So House Bill 4142A is designed to deal with that, and it provides the Department of Public or Department of Public Safety Standards and Training with a tool to deal with this problem. The bill allows DPSST to ensure that private security companies do not use names that mimic or could be confused with local, state, or federal law enforcement agencies or the military. During the hearing process, we were able to narrow the bill in scope in a way that got at the issue while avoiding some unintended consequences, one of which was to ensure we did not place undue burden on legacy security companies that are long established and familiar within the community. To that end, Representative Springer helped us get over that hurdle with an amendment that addressed the issue. Further, in conversations with dozens of security professionals from around the state, to a person, each has been supportive of both the effort and the amended direction of the legislation. I can also tell you that the chiefs and sheriffs are also in support of this bill. So the bill restores a civil enforcement mechanism that allows DPSST to deal with problems when they arise, and it also provides them with the discretion to work with a given security company to ensure compliance, allowing a phase-in over time. So in conclusion, I hope you'll support the bill, and I can answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Questions for the representative? Chris, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4142A. I think before we go into work session, I do have a member who had to go to Ways and Means, so we'll hold off and we'll come back when I know that she wanted to vote on matters today, but we'll take care of that today one way or the other. With that, we're going to go ahead and open up our next public hearing, which will be on House Bill 4067A. And Chana?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, House Bill 4067A comes to you from Representative Buehler. It provides an affirmative defense to employees who disclose, with good faith and an objectively reasonable belief, information on violations of state, federal, local law, rule, or regulation, so long as the disclosure is to a specific group, and that includes a state regulatory agency, law enforcement, a member of the legislative assembly, a manager or supervisor, or a licensed attorney. The information disclosed must be accessed lawfully for the protections to apply, and if allegations are against a coworker or supervisor, it must relate to the course and scope of employment of that person. It requires public and nonprofit employers to establish and implement policies on employee rights and requires those policies be delivered to each employee. and it prohibits attorneys who disclose it prohibits attorneys from disclosing information related to representation of a client. Makes it a Class A misdemeanor and allows civil penalty of up to $10,000. You have proposed -A8 amendments before you, which incorporate the majority of 4067A, but specify that the affirmative defense is not available if information is disclosed or redisclosed by an employee to someone other than the authorized person. And it clarifies the effect of the attorney-client privilege in regards to disclosure and removes allowance of damages in amounts not exceeding $10,000, but specifies that the measure does not limit other remedies. It's not ready to move today with the A8s. We're waiting on paperwork.
All right. Let's see. Representative Mueller, why don't you come up? Is there anyone else you want to bring up with you? Or do you want to just kick off?
I'll kick off.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me. For the record, my name is Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which is most of the city of Bend. And I appreciate the opportunity, Chair Przanski and esteemed members of the committee, to be here this morning. I bring to you House Bill 4067A, which has unanimous support in the House. And at the bottom line, will enhance protections for Oregon whistleblowers. I'd also like to take an opportunity at this time to really put out a big thank you to my co-sponsors, Senator Gelser and Representative Hoyle, and also a group who've worked really hard in fine-tuning and getting this legislation to its refined state, including the Department of Justice, the Oregon State Bar, the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association, and several others who spent many hours crafting the legislation, and I think improving it and overall making it strong. Here's the background. This really started last session with a man named Michael Rogers, and if you remember, he's the gentleman who refused to destroy emails. Like many heroes, Michael Rogers is neither wealthy nor powerful, but when confronted with a difficult choice, I think he really did the right thing. And in face of intimidation, he blew the whistle on potential problems in our state government at the highest level. But importantly, what his story showed to me, and I think it should show to all of us, is that we have to do more to protect those Oregonians who stand up and try to do what's right. And concerns continue about potential fraud and abuse in our state government. We've seen this expressed with the controversial business energy tax credit program. And more recently, we've heard the disturbing news from the nonprofit called Give Us This Day, which is a foster care provider. Fortunately, there are other Oregon heroes working right now in our state government and nonprofits who are willing to blow the whistle, stand up bravely and blow the whistle, I might add, on corruption at all levels. House Bill 4067A shows that we'll be there to stand with them and not let their voices be silenced through intimidation. Specifically, House Bill 4067 does three main things. One, it increases penalties for those who try to coerce or retaliate against whistleblowers. The second thing it does is it requires all public and nonprofit employers to have written whistleblower policies given to their employees outlining their rights, their protections, and privileges under this law. And the third main thing that it does is it provides an affirmative defense for whistleblowers who may turn over private documents not subject to disclosure if the whistleblower has objective reason to believe laws have been broken or evidence of mismanagement. Now, importantly, the affirmative defense will only apply if the materials are turned over to one of the indicated sources, which include legal counsel, law enforcement, state regulatory agencies, internal management, and even us as legislators. The intent of this is to provide appropriate repositories of the information rather than go to the media. That's happened in the past. That really should be a last resort. Now, two main concerns have been brought up recently. One is that this will be exceedingly costly to small nonprofits. It's not the intent, and we've clarified that simply notifying your employees of a nonprofit by email of the policies and procedures would be acceptable under this statute. And the second concern, and some have expressed that disgruntled employees may be able to break non-disclosure agreements by hiding behind whistleblower protection. But this is really not the case. They must have, quote, good faith, objective, and reasonable belief of lawbreaking. So there has to be real evidence of lawbreaking. It can't just be a data dump. And the information release must relate to the alleged violation. It can't be some obscure complaint. So in closing, the bottom line is this bill will enhance penalties for those who punish or try to intimidate whistleblowers and require that every public agency and nonprofit have whistleblower protocols in place. This will allow public and nonprofit employees a safe place to turn and feel more comfortable reporting possible fraud and abuse. I think certainly we and the people of Oregon will benefit from this. Thank you very much. Be willing to take questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the representative? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. I've got a panel of proponents I'm going to call up. Amber Hollister, Art Towers, and looks like John Devlin are on the same sheet. And then I've got also Stacy Cowan. So if we can bring a fourth chair up, we'll go ahead and do it that way.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, this is Amber Hollister on behalf of the Oregon State Bar. I just wanted to clarify that the bar is not taking a position this morning.
All right. That's why you didn't check any of the boxes, including neutral.
That's correct.
All right. Now we know. It's official. So being neutral, did you want to go ahead and go first, and then we'll let the proponents go ahead and say why you should be going to the proponent side versus the opponent side?
Very well.
All right.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Amber Hollister. I'm the Oregon State Bar's general counsel, and I'm here this morning really to address a narrow issue, and that is the protection of the attorney-client privilege and the duty of confidentiality that Oregon attorneys owe their clients. And so if you have any questions regarding those matters, I'm happy to address them. We've had an opportunity to speak with Representative Buehler and to work with the House on amendments that I think address the concerns surrounding the duty of confidentiality. But I just am here to emphasize its importance to our system of justice and the rule of law.
All right. So at this point, you're comfortable with what has the bill is presented to the Senate, having the safeguards that you think is necessary for the attorney-client privilege?
Chair Przanski, I think that's correct.
Okay.
But it does address those concerns.
All right. Let me just see if there's any questions from Ms. Hollister.
Well, I guess I have a question. All right. The A8s, is that that are being considered, is that something that you're in support of?
Have you seen the A8 yet?
Okay.
Chair Przanski, Senator Thatcher, I've not seen the AA amendments.
Okay. So those apparently are floating, and we're waiting for paperwork. So you may want to look at those, make certain that there's no changes in the bar's position as to the status of the bill as it was presented to us.
I will do that. Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to let you step back since you were in a neutral position. And why don't you, the other three, who is going to go first?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, Stacy Callen with SEIU Local 503. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 4067. SEIU represents frontline workers both in the public and in the nonprofit settings. Our members have actually experienced firsthand retaliation that often comes from managers when workers expose misuse of taxpayer dollars, abuse and neglect, and occasionally outright criminal activity. In recent years, workers at the Oregon Health Authority uncovered terrible mismanagement that led to an overhaul of the agency and then helped improve treatment for at-risk youth. Custodial staff at the Department of Administration uncovered evidence of fraudulent activity associated with a contractor that had a sweetheart deal. In both of these instances, even with the protection of a union contract, workers feared for their jobs and for other types of reprisal. It takes a tremendous amount of courage for a worker to speak out. it takes, it's a lot to ask for someone to put their livelihood on the line, and many times there are significant disincentives to doing so. In the nonprofit setting, the situation is often worse. Workers that witness abuse are often intimidated into not reporting this sort of abuse. We ran across this with workers who tried to organize a union at a group home for Oregonians with developmental disabilities. Something that occurred to me as I was preparing my testimony today, I think it's important for us to ask ourselves why somebody would oppose legislation like this. And the question that comes to my mind is, what are they trying to hide? House Bill 4067 takes important steps forward to protect whistleblowers in the public and the nonprofit settings. We feel strongly that when you look at the sponsorship of this legislation, the House vote and the House committee vote and the House floor vote, they all indicate the bipartisan support that's needed to improve quality public services and the quality of care. The more that we can improve upon existing protections, the more folks are going to be encouraged to speak out. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to talk today, and we hope we can count on your support for House Bill 4067.
All right, thank you. Who's going to go next?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arthur Towers with the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. We also want to add our support. Our organization represents attorneys who fight for whistleblowers in the court of law. They represent these courageous workers. And the point that I wanted to emphasize is that the bill does a good job addressing both internal whistleblowing as people go to managers and supervisors, and also external whistleblowing. And our members' experience is that whistleblowers often start internally before they go externally. And so this is an important step in the right direction. But the words on the page zero in on workers and attorney-client privilege and technical aspects of the law. And really, to my way of thinking, this bill is about something much more important. And to that end, I'd like to turn it over to OTLA member John Devlin.
And good morning. My name is John Devlin. I'm a board member of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. I'm also a former prosecutor for Multnomah County before I joined OTLA. And to me, as Arthur said, looking at this bill, I focus on the victims of these crimes ultimately and this misconduct. And you can have child abuse or sexual abuse or elder abuse, financial fraud. And oftentimes we all know that organizations sometimes can lose their way, whether they're public organizations, nonprofits. But then a lot of times when some of that is discovered, then they don't always do what they're supposed to do in terms of covering up and not dealing with the problem. And that the insiders in those organizations are the people who know the problems. And so often when something erupts, people go and look at it and say, well, look at all the people who knew something about this. How could they not have come forward? And a lot of times they don't come forward because they're scared to come forward, and they're scared what's going to happen to them. And without people inside organizations, when they do lose their way, courageous people standing up, more abuse can happen, whether it's sexual abuse, child abuse, things of that nature. And so to me, what this is about is protecting the ultimate victims of the crimes and stopping things before they get too far by the insiders being able to come forward as they hopefully will.
And Chair Przanski, members of the committee, John's being bashful. He, what he does is he fights for these victimized children and other victims of abuse, and that's one of the natures of his practice. And again, that work's important. It'll be enhanced if we can pass this bipartisan bill.
Arthur's done this more often than me, so he knew that.
John, you've done well. Thank you very much. Let me see if there's any questions for anyone on the panel. Thank you all very much for coming forward.
Thank you.
All right, our next panel is going to be Mark Landauer, John Burns, and Ian Whitlock, I believe.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. The Public Ports Association represents all 23 public ports in the state of Oregon, from Brookings Harbor up to Astoria and as far east as the port of Umatilla. The OPPA does have concerns with 4067, and I want to, at the outset, apologize to Representative Bueller for not raising these concerns in the first chamber. However, we became aware of a sort of a fact scenario that came to our attention after the measure arrived here in the Senate. Needless to say, time is short here, and we would hope that you would consider one of two options, either one, moving the bill down to Rules Committee so further work can be conducted before the deadline, or secondly, just flat out exempting local government from this particular measure. With me today is John Burns, the newly appointed CEO of the Port of Coos Bay, and Ian Whitlock, who is the Chief Deputy Attorney at the Port of Portland. I'd like to turn it over to them to provide some insights as to why we are concerned with the measure.
That'd be fine. Mark, if you just clarify, you said exempt out who?
Local government from the bill.
And how do you define local government?
Well, it can be done so in several ways, Senator. Local government being special districts, cities, counties, okay. That nature.
Thank you. Who's next?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is John Burns, and as Mark said, I'm the newly appointed CEO at Coos Bay. And I thank you for affording me the opportunity to come and speak with you today to address what I have considered as some concerns regarding this bill. For me, no doubt the bill comes from noble intentions, but I think perhaps as it has progressed that there are some unintended consequences which may not have been taken into consideration. The people at the Port of Coos Bay worked very hard to try and fulfill our mission of promoting a sustainable, developed economy in Southwest Oregon and in the state. And in order to do that, we have to solicit individual companies to come in and try and engage our services and work in our port. To that end, we routinely have to enter into both non-disclosure agreements and exclusive negotiating agreements with those potential tenants. Now, I did hear the characterization of things to hide or perhaps nefarious activities taking place. When we look at this and the compelling reason to maintain that confidentiality, which is borne by those agreements, it's merely for commercial activities on the part of our potential business partners. It is very difficult to have businesses want to engage, whether it's the Port of Coos Bay or anywhere else in Oregon, if there's a concern that some of their private commercial activities, which may be connected with sourcing supplies, how they deliver through their logistics system, and what transpires that gives them an economic advantage, perhaps, to their competitors. Employees generally act in good faith and through reasonable beliefs. But sometimes there are difficulties in people really understanding what the law is, what regulations entail, and sometimes, despite the best of intentions that that individual may have, they may be incorrect in how they see that. Should there be a mistaken introduction by an employee that brings this to some other party that then violates the agreements that the port has in place, it can have very, very significant consequences and negative consequences to the port. Breaking those ENAs and NDAs, first and foremost, could have a tremendous economic impact by preventing those companies that were working with the port from moving forward and walking away, and thus the port loses the opportunity for development. Secondly, under those agreements, there are issues of liability that the port would have to fight in court, and potentially there would be awards that would be made to the other party for the port's violation of such disclosures. Based on our concern, we would respectfully request that the Senate Judiciary Committee narrow the scope of this bill to eliminate the affirmative defense described in Section 1 if the information is protected under a non-disclosure agreement or an exclusive negotiating agreement executed by the employer, and further, that the scope of the bill apply only to state entities. Thank you.
All right.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name again is Ian Whitlock. I'm Deputy General Counsel at the Port of Portland. I won't take much of the committee's time this morning. I would like to repeat Mark's apology for coming rather late to the game here. I have a couple of questions that I just like to float out, some points of confusion as I look at the bill, which may be clarified through separate conversations. First, with respect to the role of public attorneys, much of what I have seen in the amendments to the original bill and what I've heard this morning here give me much comfort. When I first saw the bill, and even in its present state, I have some concerns that simply calling out public attorneys as individuals who might be whistleblowers, I see as potentially causing some difficulty trying to explain to my internal clients what it is that I do and what it is that I won't do. But hearing the state bar's statements and reading their testimony, I think that we're on pretty good ground to remind folks that as public attorneys, we're not going to be disclosing confidences that are brought to us for the purpose of delivering legal counsel. My second question is more of a technical question. I'm somewhat confused. I remain somewhat confused despite what I've heard this morning about the circumstances under which a whistleblower's affirmative defense would be triggered. Specifically, what exactly is a violation of law by a public employer? And I'm thinking, for example, in my instance, I'm wondering in what cases the Port of Portland, which is my employer, would violate the law in a way that would trigger the affirmative defense. Does that mean any employee of the Port of Portland? Does it mean simply an employee who has come to me for legal advice and through that connection I become aware, for example, of a violation of law? Does it require action by our governing body, the Board of Commissioners of the Port? Is that required for the port, my employer, to have violated the law? That sense of confusion is something that I think might be better addressed if I was simply more familiar with the bill, but to the extent that those questions raise issues in your minds, I'd ask that you consider perhaps some action to clarify the law either in its text or its legislative history. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions? I've got a couple. John, I guess I'm going to direct it to you since you're the one that brought this up. Okay. Anyone else answer if you'd like. Taking the scenario that if you had an employee at the port who believed in good faith that there was some type of fraudulent transaction in the process of occurring, they're under one of these non-disclosed agreements, but it comes to their attention that someone's getting a kickback or whatever it may be, how do they deal with that? And without having the ability, since they work for a local government under the special districts, to be able to go forward, present it, and still have some type of safety from making that exposure?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that if that were the case, it would not be imbued in a non-disclosure agreement to begin with if there were fraudulent behavior taking place. So I would find it hard to believe that by carving out information that is covered by an NDA or an ENA would supersede anything. I appreciate your question about ports and local governments, but again, I think there are ways that this bill can be looked at to address these potential impacts of negative consequence on the business enterprises that we engage in.
Right. I guess I'm just not following your answer as to what it actually means. I mean, if you have someone that believes they've signed the agreement, they're looking at this, and during this process, it comes to their attention, their belief based on the negotiations, that there's actually fraudulent aspects to it. Maybe the part of it could be from the information that's received while there's negotiations going on, or it could be just, I mean, just outright graft. I mean, I'm not saying it happens, but it could happen. And if someone basically says, you know, you take care of this, I'll scratch your back, and you'll get this in return. I mean, that seems to me that I don't see a reason why they would per se be coming in and saying, here's all of the formula that this company uses to determine whether or not they can make it or break it in a economic situation. But what I'm hearing as to the request is that we basically say that we're going to tie the hands of an employee who could, in fact, have information, knowledge that there's wrongful activity going on. So if they basically did this dump of giving all this information that came through the negotiations out, it would seem to me, what purpose and what reason were they giving it to whoever they're reporting it to? And is it something that was necessary to be given to bring forward the assertion that there's something rotten in Denmark?
And I appreciate that. And again, I'm very new to Oregon, so I can't really speak to any other sections of the law which may apply in this particular case. But I would say that, again, there's a great amount of reliance that's put on the individual to really have an expertise in what is permissible and what is not permissible. And in this particular case, one may assume that something is improper and bring that forth when in fact it is not improper. And that could be catastrophic for a business situation.
All right, Senator Yeltsin and then Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the good faith piece here is really important, and that it has to be a violation of rule or law. One of the reasons I was particularly interested in this bill was the problem that people had both in the nonprofit sector, the local government sector, and the state government sector around abuse of children in foster care. And you have to look at what the employee, exactly what you just said, what they know that they are allowed to disclose. We had a circumstance where this employee went to the state to disclose that home studies were being signed by a person that was dead, that couldn't do the home study, that people were being paid under the table, that kids didn't have food, that they were abused. She was then sued by the employer because all of the employees had been required to sign a non-disclosure agreement, which frankly was probably illegal, but they didn't know that, that said they couldn't talk about anything that had happened within this facility for 50 years unless there was an order by a judge and the nonprofit board and its executive director. So that the result of that fear meant that for years, kids couldn't be helped when they were experiencing severe abuse. The same thing happened at the Department of Human Services, where administrators knew about this problem and they were shut down and didn't have the legal protection they needed when they knew kids were in significant danger. So I'm really grateful to Representative Buehler for bringing this forward. I would be strongly opposed to cutting out local government or nonprofits because the Give Us This Day circumstance makes it really clear what happens when people are too afraid to blow a whistle. Kids get sexually abused, they're starved, they're physically abused, bones get broken. And to me, that's where I would put the balance of the risk, is to keep people safe and have integrity in government.
Yeah. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess to be quite specific, the intent of this bill I have no problem with. But to be quite specific, I'm going to talk about the Port of Coos Bay. And a project that has been in the works for many, many years now. It's an LNG terminal. It's a critical and important piece of the expansion of the port to actually benefit the entire economy of Southern Oregon. There's no question in that. There are organized groups vehemently opposed to that project. And I just want to make sure that we're not creating something that's going to give them leverage to either cost the port money or slow down the process. And I'm just not there yet. You know, the intent, Senator Yeltsin, I fully understand that, and I think that's appropriate. I just want to, you know, one of the things we have to look at when we do legislation is unintended consequences. And And, you know, if we're carving out special districts, which wouldn't impact what you're talking about sort of thing as a separation, but, you know, the economy of Southern Oregon has been bad for a long time. The Port of Coos Bay could be our salvation, and I'd hate to see something blocking the progress we have been making over the last several years.
Senator Thatcher?
I don't know if this is to them as it is so much to you, perhaps, but it seems like there does need to be a safety valve without also going full bore public with something. I don't know. Is there a way that you could set it up where a person goes to a judge, you know, confidentially, or something where it's kept confidential, but yet there's a third party overseeing and saying, well, no, this is the law, that's not a violation, you know, or, something looks fishy here.
Yeah.
Is there a way to do that, kind of a middle ground?
Well, I think what Representative Mueller's put forward, at least what I heard from the testimony, is that there are mechanisms for that to occur. There's specific agencies or organizations or individuals within the organization that they can go to and have that protection. This is not the first, blush at looking at doing this. There's multiple states that have these laws in place, and so I'm really kind of puzzled that this stage we have all this opposition coming in where apparently there wasn't any or very little on the House side. So in answer to your question, yes, I think there's some things that we can do. The reality is it has to be done in good faith, and if someone is actually trying to do an out to somehow undercut such as a project as Senator Cruz has said, they're going to be in a situation that if they can't demonstrate that what they did was in good faith and that they had reasonable belief and perspective, that they can be held accountable for that conduct. And, you know, it's just one of those things for me. I'm kind of puzzled as to how we can't do it. Now, maybe what we should do is look at some of the outlets that have been testified to, maybe narrow those down a little bit more. Law enforcement was one of them. I mean, clearly you should be able to go to law enforcement. It seems to me that that's a pretty straightforward. I'm not sure if it would be advantageous for someone to go directly to a court. I'm not sure of the mechanism of how they would get into it, but I think there's other entry points.
Yeah, a third party without going, because I feel almost like even going to the legislature, that's almost going public.
I agree with. I think that's maybe not the best outlet, just in the sense of if it comes to us, what are we going to do? We would more than likely be obligated, from my perspective, to turn around to law enforcement. So I'm not sure if we need to have a buffer or a middle person in between those two conversations. Other comments before we move on with the next panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward. Our next panel is going to be Jim White, Roger Martin, Betsy Earls, and Elizabeth Rimley, I believe. So we've got a couple more hearings we need to do, so if y'all could be more specific on your concerns and objections so we can kind of narrow those down, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'll start. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. And the position that we're taking on House Bill 4067 right now is in opposition, but frankly, that is only in opposition to the bill as it's written right now. We would be happy to see the bill go forward, but we do think that it needs some more work, and we would ask your indulgence to work with the proponents of the bill to try and get something that's a little bit better fit for everybody.
Let me just ask, because I was asked on Friday, in fact, Ms. Earls, you're one of the individuals asking if this committee would be willing to do that. I said I would as the chair, and we wouldn't be trying to move it till tomorrow. So can you tell us right now what work's been done since Friday's conversation?
Say that again.
What has happened in the sense of I'm not waiting. I don't want to wait till we wait out to the point we have no time.
Oh, sure.
We've had now 72 hours that's passed since that conversation has occurred. in your presentation, if you can tell us what you've done with the representative in trying to take care of the concerns you have, that would be very beneficial for the chair.
Mr. Chair, I have contacted the representative and tried to have a conversation with him, and we have not been able to make that happen. However, I have come up with a couple problems that we would like to fix specifically if we can have that conversation. We have an amendment into legislative council right now, and it's sort of a broad fix if the bill has to move tomorrow, for example. But if we have a little more time, we can make some more, I think, pointed fixes to the bill that will make it work a little better for us. A couple things I'd like to point out right now. Currently, the bill provides an affirmative defense for employees who, when they're turning over documents that they are turning over in good faith because they have good faith concerns, they could be violating federal non-disclosure laws. We would like to find a way to address that problem. I would point out that the bill removes the affirmative defense if the information that the employee turns over in good faith is redisclosed, but the employee is not necessarily, honestly, in control of what happens to the information after they turn it over. So it's not necessarily appropriate for the affirmative defense to be removed if the information is redisclosed. Honestly, information under this bill could be turned over to any attorney, including one on the opposing side of a problem, such as Senator Cruz referenced down in Coos Bay. So I think probably the broad fix would be to remove any entities that are not state entities for now and have a work group to work on it during the interim in good faith. A narrower fix would be to have a closer look, as Senator Thatcher suggested and you suggested, at the entities that the information could be turned over to, so there was less chance of redisclosure and less chance of information getting out into the public and creating harm.
Okay, thank you. Who's next?
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, Elizabeth Rummel here. Is this working?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Okay. Here today representing Cambia Health Solutions, which is Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield's parent company. We have some concerns about the bill, although we are supportive of the intent, and we think that the representative has the right idea in mind when he drafted it and as it's moving forward. Our specific concern is around the differences between federal disclosure laws and the disclosure laws in this bill, specifically the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA. It requires healthcare entities and their employees to maintain certain privacy and security protections and subjects those entities to liability if personal health information is shared without authorization. The law contains a number of exceptions, including one for whistleblower activities. However, the person to whom disclosure is allowed under HIPAA is narrower than what is currently proposed in House Bill 4067A. Since states may not enact more lenient privacy standards than what is allowed under the federal law, the current bill would leave a subset of employees in a confusing space where something allowable under state law conflicts with federal law, and where something intended to be helpful may result in personal liability. Our other concern is that it's in the case of healthcare stuff, specifically and HIPAA violations, some of the outlets listed in House Bill 4067A are public entities that would be subject to public disclosure laws. Our patient privacy records could be disclosed in a way that would be accessible to the public and could release information about their health records that could put them in a potential situation of being, for example, if the privacy records included a history of drug abuse and their employer were able to find out, that would be a problem for that patient. Something that was not intended to be part of the disclosure. The disclosure might have been about a suspicion of healthcare fraud. We want to make sure that we don't have any patient privacy violated in a public way here, and we have concerns that there is some of this unintended consequences in the bill.
All right, we'll come back to questions. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, my name is Roger Martin. I'm representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. I apologize also for not having gotten to this. I got a call on Friday afternoon from our attorney who called me and said, you know, Roger, there are hundreds or a myriad of small nonprofits, single employer nonprofits, who will be required to develop a policy and all the rest of it. I've served on those kind of small nonprofits. I'm not worried about the punishment, the problem. I'm just worried about the paperwork of an organization that's got no reason to really have to be organized. I think the reach on this bill went too far. I would just simply appeal to you and say there's going to be a suggestion that nonprofits be studied during the interim. If that's not possible, at least exclude the ones that are two or three employees, because it reminds me of what happens with the Ethics Commission that all of us are familiar with. One of my clients failed to report, didn't do it on purpose, just missed the reporting period, and 30 days, 90 days later, gets a $750 fine, and I spent 1 month's worth of salary trying to undo, which was a paperwork problem. And that's the kind of paperwork I don't think we need to make little tiny organizations have to go through. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Jim White. I'm the executive director of the Nonprofit Association of Oregon. We were, I believe, the lone opposition when this was heard in the House, in the House Judiciary. I won't go over, because we share all of the concerns already listed, I won't go over those. I would also encourage you to read my previous testimony from the House side, which was not taken up by the proponents. We are a strong advocate for whistleblower policies. We are, in fact, the dissemination partner for the independent sector's best practices on whistleblowing. We just think that this bill goes way too far and have both philosophical and technical concerns. What I expressed on the House side were largely the philosophical. Now we've begun to really review this through a legal lens and seen some very serious technical issues that would expose not only nonprofit employees to some of the issues that have already been raised, non-disclosure agreements, federal violations of HIPAA and other federal acts, Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act, the Family Education Rights Privacy Act, the Privacy Act of 1974, as well as the, and for the public employees, the Federal Information Security Act. So there are some serious concerns that extend beyond our concern around nonprofits that we would encourage the committee to really look at. One of our big concerns with this is that it defines employee for the nonprofits to also include board members. That means that more than 17,000 nonprofits in Oregon and the 178,000 employees plus the tens of thousands of board members would now fall under this new legislation. The board members are volunteers of a nonprofit, of a charitable benefit organization. They are not employees. So we have a very serious concern of that expansion of the law to include board members. And we see that this would have, as has already been testified, very serious consequences. This is not just a simple template. I mean, this is what my organization does, is work with nonprofits on how do you prepare for these kinds of things. This would take serious legal review, depending on the size and the particular type of nonprofit. So this does have expense associated with it. We also believe that this undermines some of the existing regulations that are already in place, Sarbanes-Oxley, the 990, which is already filled out for the IRS for nonprofits, as well as potentially undermines existing bodies who are the regulators of these current claims, the Department of Justice and others. Finally, I would just mention that we have a very serious concern about the expansion, or perhaps it's not understood that as it's written now, the definition of nonprofit in this is 501c3. I think it's important that the committee understand that includes churches, over 3,000 churches here in Oregon. So I think that the committee should look very carefully at creating whistleblower protections that are not thoughtfully cross-referenced with laws pertaining to religious freedoms and separation of church and state. We also want to alert the committee to the fact that we don't believe that the fiscal impact statement is correct. If, in fact, this is going to unleash a pent-up desire to whistleblow for both public and nonprofit employees, and in the case of nonprofits, board members, we believe that the Department of Justice, these other bodies that might act as recipients of that information, are going to have to staff up. So we've not seen a real argument for the expansion of this to the nonprofit sector. Finally, we're just confused, I guess, as why zero in on 501c3s? Let's include all nonprofits. Let's include the C6s, the C9s, the other types. There are 20 different types of nonprofit here in Oregon. In addition, why not include the for-profit sector? I'm sure that we could probably go back and find a whistleblower concerned right now about the polluting of Portland's air at a glass manufacturer. So if you're going to pass this kind of a law, I would seriously encourage you to look at this as separating out the private, the public, and the nonprofit sector in different types of regulations. Thank you.
Questions, Senator Gelser first and Senator Thatcher next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm confused. If there is a pent-up desire to whistleblow across the nonprofit sector, that would seem to argue for the importance of this bill, because to make that report, it has to be a good faith belief that law or policy is being broken. And if there is a large pent-up group of people in Oregon's nonprofits and churches that are concerned that the law is being violated, why would we not want to allow that to happen? And I guess the last point is this, to me, the opposition confuses me because there is that good faith provision. We are not talking about, I don't like what the organization is doing, I disagree with their project, I disagree with their philosophy. It is, I see a law that is being broken and I want to fulfill my duty as a citizen, as an employee, to report that to the appropriate authorities so that it can be fixed and not risk losing my job or being sued in the process. Why 501c3s? We've seen significant problems within the nonprofit sector. Mighty Oaks Children's Therapy, Oregon PTI, Give Us This Day. I mean, we could go on, and the consequences are real people get hurt. So if there is this pent-up frustration that simply just argues for the bill, let the whistleblowers free and make sure that we're complying with the law.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. Mine's more of a practical question, I guess, about HIPAA has whistleblower outlets, and what are they?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Thatcher, it does have a whistleblower provision, and the outlets there are much narrower. I do not know what they are, and I can get back to you on that.
All right, so let me just throw a couple of things out here. One is on HIPAA. I'm trying to figure out on what basis, if someone thinks that an organization is breaking the law in some capacity, that they felt that they would need to disclose personal medical records of somebody to call this attention that a law is being broken, someone's being abused, whatever it may be. I'm trying to figure out, wrap my mind around how we're getting to the point that we're here to protect these records, which doesn't seem to be in good faith, would need to be released to report this situation.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the question. Catherine, did this document get uploaded? Okay. I had a document that contained several examples for you, and I apologize.
If it's on OLIS, we'll look at it.
I'm not sure if it worked. So let me just read you the example that is a specific answer to your question. An employee in the accounting department of a nonprofit hospital discloses to a member of the legislature the protected patient information of 1,000 patients, believing that the hospital has systematically defrauded Medicare. Among the disclosures is information related to patients' drug abuse. The employee is mistaken. The hospital has correctly billed each of the patients. Several of the patients, as a result of a redisclosure, several of the patients lose their jobs. The hospital may be subject to HIPAA penalties of up to $1.5 million per year due to the disclosure. House Bill 4067, sub 2, which I mentioned earlier in my testimony, does not prevent this violation. as the first disclosure of protected information is what triggers the HIPAA violation. The hospital and the affected patients are foreclosed from suing for damages related to that disclosure.
All right. Other questions?
And I will get that uploaded for you if it's not yet.
Jim?
Chair Przanski, Senator Gelser, I wanted to answer your question or the statement you made. I don't believe that there is a pent-up group of whistleblowers out there. I think there are problems inside of inside of nonprofits. There are problems inside of government. There are problems inside of private industry. I'm simply pointing out that if, in fact, there is, as the proponents are saying, this pent-up desire, then the fiscal impact statement is incorrect, that this won't have some type of impact for financing. But I don't believe that there is that, and I believe that the DOJ regularly does hear from people who are expressing concerns, and they then take the measures to work on those organizations and shut them down.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add one more thing. I think that there's a lot of emphasis being placed in this conversation on the good faith and objectively reasonable belief of the employee that's doing the disclosing, and I understand that that's important, but I would also point out that good faith, objectively reasonable, is not always accurate. So at the very least, what we're asking is for some narrower protection of where that information can be disclosed so that it has less chance of escaping out into the whatever, not the stratosphere, but you get the idea.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming forward. I don't have anyone else that's on the list that hasn't been called, but I'll ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on 4067A. Not seeing anyone, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on the 4067A, and we're now going to open up one on House Bill 4066A.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, House Bill 4066A comes to you from Representative Huffman. This is one of our favorite subjects. It is drones, UASs. This measure makes it a Class A misdemeanor if any person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly operates a UAS that is capable of firing a bullet or projectile or otherwise operates it as a dangerous weapon. It modifies the definition of UAS to apply to all flying machines, which will now include model aircraft. It removes UASs from the felony crime of endangering aircraft and creates a new violation of reckless interference with an aircraft. This is when a drone gets in the way of a helicopter or other plane taking off or landing, that sort of situation. It also requires public bodies that use UASs to have a policy and procedure for its use and have that in development by January 1st, 2017. We now will remove the private right of action for operators who fly a UAS in compliance with Federal Aviation Administration authorization. You remember that from the 2013 session, I believe. And we create a violation if someone knowingly or intentionally operates a UAS over a critical facility within an altitude of 400 feet or makes contact with the critical facility. Now, critical facilities are defined as things like dams and chemical plants and correction facilities and law enforcement facilities. We have two sets of amendments today. One is the proposed -A11 amendment, which allows a public body, federal agency, or contractor of such, or any person in the practice of animal husbandry, to use a UAS with a projectile for the purpose of administrating medication or tranquilizer to animals. There were two scenarios that were envisioned here. One is the cougar on the loose in the city, and wouldn't it be nice if ODFNW could put a tranquilizer dart in it with a drone. And the other is a farmer, agricultural operator, who might want to use this to administer medicine to the animal. We also have the A12, which clarifies that operation with an FAA authorization doesn't preclude any other civil rights of action, such as a tort for invasion of privacy. And it adds that using a UAS to commit the crime, to make a record for invasion of privacy criminal purposes, is also not authorized. So you can't get around invasion of privacy by using a drone.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to start off with Representative Huffman and Kevin, why don't you come on up too with John, and we'll get your two, and then we'll pick up the other two.
Chair Przanski, committee, John Huffman, state representative for House District 59, and convener of the UAS work group. You probably won't find it surprising that Representative Krieger was the one that came up with the idea for the amendment on the tranquilizing, and we thought that that was a valid point that maybe we had missed, and it could be a useful tool. So we present that to the committee today, and then I believe the chair had the other amendment. This is a product of our UAS work group, which we've had going since 2012, and every session we bring in some creative ideas around the uses of drones and the misuses of drones, and try to stay on top of the technology. A lot of support for House Bill 4066. There was a Consumer Technology Association letter that was submitted about an hour ago to the committee, and they have some concerns. The CTA has been invited to work with the work group in the interim and as a permanent member of the work group if they so choose, because I think they bring a valid perspective, because a lot of drones are equipped with technology from companies that they represent that are members. Our work group includes industry members from the drone industry sector, hobby drone folks, law enforcement. I mean, we really try to cover everybody. Consumer technology, used to be consumer electronics, has been welcome at the group. They haven't come, but hopefully in the future they will. They had some concerns on the critical facility that I think we'll be able to address their concerns in the interim. Nobody else has particularly shared those concerns. They also have concerns that we may be addressing things in this bill that the FAA may or may not address in the future. Our work group has decided that we're not going to wait on the FAA to make decisions. They may or may not at some point create some rules around the use of drones, but we're not going to wait on that. We're going to move forward, and of course the feds have preemption, and we can deal with that in the future if necessary. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Kevin?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association to speak in favor of House Bill 4066, a engrossed version. A couple quick items. We participated in the work group, and I appreciate Representative Huffman and Committee Council Newell's work, because it was a complicated process. As it relates to law enforcement, as you know, in 2013 we passed House Bill 2710, which really focused on law enforcement use of these unmanned aircraft systems. This bill adds a couple elements that relate to public safety. One of them is in the bill in 2710, it never really required police agencies utilizing drones to adopt policies on data and to actually have those available to the public. This bill does require that. We're fine with that. The other piece that I think is extremely important, although the FAA may weigh into this issue eventually, is the issue of critical infrastructure facilities. And that is, as we look at correctional facilities, I think you have a letter in the record from Director Peters from DOC indicating that it is happening around the nation where drones are, not surprisingly, delivering items into correctional facilities, whether it's phones or other interesting, probably files and things like that. And so those are important provisions for us in the bill that we feel like are important. The bill we can support. As for the amendments, we're fine with the committee's interest in either adopting them or not. Based on the committee's wishes, I did have one question on the firing of a tranquilizer from a drone, and that is just to make sure on the record that a lobbyist is not considered an animal for purposes of the use of the drones. And with that, chair members, yes, I know.
Fortunately, there's probably a no-fly zone around the Capitol, so I think you may
Thank
be
you.
Okay.
Did we list it as a critical infrastructure facility? I think we should.
That would be... We can debate that point later on.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
All right. Any questions for either of our presenters? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Matt Marquis and Hasina Squires, as they're coming up, Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 4066A?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing the American Chemistry Council this morning. Just testifying briefly in support of the critical infrastructure facilities piece to this drone bill. This was done at our request. We worked with the interim task force throughout the interim on this issue, and we're able to come up with this language that's mostly based out of Texas, actually, ACLU as well as the hobbyists that were represented on the work group both agreed to this language and testified in support of it in the House side. We just feel that for safety purposes, creating a no-fly zone over these types of facilities is important, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of Amazon.com. I don't think it's any secret that Amazon is interested at some point in the near future in commercial delivery of small packages via drone use. So the language of House Bill 4066A includes an exemption from the private right of action for commercial commercial use that is FAA approved. The Dash 12 amendment is the chair's amendment, and we support that amendment. It clarifies that current civil remedies and invasion of personal privacy statutes still do apply to the use of drones in commercial activity. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Questions?
I'm expecting my Amazon deliveries by drone relatively soon. So,
excellent.
It's a new world. All right, thank you very much for coming forward. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4067A. Six, excuse me. We're getting ready to looking at the wrong thing. So that's 66A. So we'll close that one. And now we're going to go down and do our last public hearing. We do have a work session that we will be doing back on 4142A. But let's go ahead and open up the public hearing on 4074A.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. This is House Bill 4074A. It is brought to us by the House Committee on Judiciary. House Bill 2320 was enacted in 2015 and provided for a hearing on the issue of reporting as a sex offender for juveniles within the juvenile court. An unforeseen consequence of this was that juveniles adjudicated before August 12, 2015 were no longer required to register. House Bill 4074 corrects this error and addresses procedural issues related to these hearings. Additionally, Senate Bill 622 from the 2013 session created an any other person allowed by the court provision for inspecting or copying juvenile court files. There has been concerns that this provision does not supply the courts with sufficient guidance. House Bill 4074A fixes this issue by detailing the procedures for a person or entity not already covered in the statute to obtain copies of juvenile court files. There is a Dash 2 amendment which simply clarifies that documents submitted to a court for the hearing on registration must be provided to the parties in accordance with the rules governing disclosure of juvenile court files. There's also a Dash 3A amendment. This amendment allows a juvenile adjudicated in another U.S. jurisdiction to make its initial report with a law enforcement agency in the county of their residence. This conforms with the registration requirements that are currently in place for adults. There are also conforming amendments for that change in the Dash 3A, and we are still waiting on some of the fiscal impact statements for the amendments.
All right, thank you. Morning, Laura.
Yes, good morning, Chair Brzezinski, Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Hansel, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. I'm happy to answer any of your questions on this bill, but in short, it's a great bill. It's appropriate for short session. This has technical fixes resulting from House Bill 2320 from last session, which the Oregon Law Commission takes no position on. We're here to talk about our portions of the bill which address the juvenile court records, any other person provision. That's Section 7, 8, 9, 11, and 12 of this bill. We've done a lot of great work. We thank the committees and the legislature for their patience over the last several sessions as we worked out this language to reach the right balance between allowing open courts as required by the Constitution and also protecting sensitive juvenile records. We've got a great balance in this bill of providing guidance to juvenile judges and also allowing judicial discretion in these matters. We're in full support of the Dash A2 amendment. amendment. We take no position on the dash A3. We did amend this bill on the House side to add specific provisions for both Oregon State Bar and the Office of Public Defense Services. We feel we've established a really good record on this bill. We thank you, Chair Prozanski, for giving us time during informational hearings, and we've met with you all individually. All of our proceedings are a matter of public record, and our report, which has been submitted to OLIS, is extensive and does count as legislative history on the bill, and that's about it.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Laura? All right, thank you very much. Before you leave, though, on the A3s, and Whitney, who is the proponent for the A3s?
The Judiciary Committee.
Okay, what were we trying to address? I don't remember.
Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, I had received a phone call from a gentleman named Jeff from the Oregon State Police Sex Offender Registration Unit, and it had been his understanding that the bill, as originally drafted, was going to encompass provisions that mirrored the adult registration requirements done in 2015 that allowed them to register with law enforcement agencies in the county of their residence as opposed to in Marion County with the state police. That wasn't in the original bill, so that's where the request came forward, and that's what's contained in the dash 3. So it would just mirror adult registration and juveniles adjudicated coming into the state can register in the county.
All right, that definitely seems like a technical fix. Thank you for the explanation and getting that on the record. Any comments or questions at this point? Laura, thank you very much. Was there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 4074A? Not seeing, I'm going to close the public hearing. It's my understanding that we have to wait on three of the four bills that we had for public hearing this morning. So we will be carrying over House Bill 4066A, House Bill 4067A, House Bill 4074A. We also will be carrying over the work session we currently have scheduled for House Bill 4073. I do believe we have pretty much everything ready on that. There's a couple of questions that need to be answered outside of the committee, and so that will be taken up, but we'll have that back tomorrow. So I think we're carrying over everything. I think we got that all covered. Yep. With the understanding, we're now going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 4142A. And before we take the motion, Senator Gelser, this bill came forward at the very beginning while you were down at Ways and Means. This is basically to prohibit someone from using any type of acronym or names that seem similar to local, state, or federal law enforcement. So with that, I'll take a motion from the Vice Chair.
Chair, I move House Bill 4142A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4142A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 4142A to the floor. We'll close the work session on that bill. And again, for tomorrow, which is our last scheduled day for meeting, for moving any bills that are still in our committee that are under consideration, will be carried over till tomorrow. Again, House Bill 4073, 4066A, 4067A, and 4074A are all carried over until tomorrow. And
Mr. Chair, given that we're not having, it sounds like, committee on Wednesday, Chana and I spoke about this previously, but Waffle Wednesday will make a return on Wednesday morning. So anyone that wants waffles.
I understand that was a top priority for this session, and I'm glad we're able to squeeze it in before it's all over for everyone to have their waffle madness. With that said, we're going to be adjourned, and I guess if there is a possibility, depending on the paperwork on these other bills, depending on what comes from other conversations, we may need to bring the committee back in the afternoon. We'll let you know if that's necessary. With that, we're adjourned till tomorrow morning at 8:30. We're adjourned till tomorrow morning at 8:30. Sorry. With